never filtered, always fun.
When we started talking about how I'm up there with a Hockey DB page, this was 2 years ago.
It blew up.
It was flooded with Brian Hayes searches to the point where the owner of the site tweeted out, hey, has something happened to this guy? Like, assuming I had died.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Final hour, Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app, now on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Jonah Seeger from the Canadian Press. Former undisputed heavyweight champ, Boxing Hall of Famer, one of Canada's greats, Lennox Lewis, will join us in about 10 minutes. Get his take on whether or not he's taking this seriously. Mayweather-McGregor, is it a boxing match? Is it sideshow, kind of circus? Get him to define it. What he thinks is really at stake for the sport of boxing. And we'll get into the Cavs-Celtics trade a little bit later in the hour as well. A lot of people combing over Twitter accounts. Do you do that as a journalist yourself? Like,
what's that mean?
Someone gets traded, like Isaiah Thomas. Would you go back into the archives of his Twitter account to see if he's ever tweeted anything in bad taste about the Cavs or LeBron?
No.
You wouldn't do that?
No.
Because someone has done that.
I think it's a smart thing to... Nah, smart's probably the wrong word.
Is there journalistic integrity behind that?
Well, I remember everyone did it with Durant when he signed with Golden State. Everyone went back to that tweet he put out about... It was something to do with... People thought it was to do with LeBron leaving Cleveland, I think. But I think he was referring to something else. Anyway, I think you can take the tweets out of context.
I think you can.
It's really useful with Trump because he's basically said every thought
everything
he has.
He said, Obama golfed too much.
Yes.
You shouldn't do this, that, or the other. There's, for everything he does, there's a former tweet that bites him. But Isaiah Thomas, I guess, back in 2010, now to be fair to him, he wasn't even in the NBA at this point. He was still in college, had not been drafted. I don't even know which game he's talking about or which series he's talking about, but he tweeted out, all you LeBron fans, that's the difference between Kobe and LeBron. Kobe wouldn't let anybody punk him like LeBron let Boston do. He's out. So now this has become a big thing because 7 years ago, Isaiah Thomas had a take on LeBron versus Kobe, which is so unfair and so stupid.
Because that's what sports fans do.
And he was a fan. He was in college.
Right. That's what we do. Like, we look at players and we assess them in real time. And I'm trying to remember what was going on then. That was probably when he lost in the Eastern Conference final, I think. And then left.
2010, though, I think he still would have been
with Miami
at that point. That might have been when they were down 3-2, I think, in that series. I'd have to look it up. Because remember, they were down early. That's when Garnett was still there and Pierce was still there. And Miami came back and ended up winning that series. Boston, I think, went into TD Garden. Miami went into the Garden Game 6 and LeBron like went off to tie it up. They won in 7. Then they lost to Dallas that year. But still, who cares? It doesn't mean he hates on LeBron. Doesn't mean he's not looking forward to playing with LeBron. That's one tweet where when you comb over it, I think it's unfair to ask a guy, hey, what were you saying? What were you thinking 7 years ago?
Right. Do you think LeBron is really going to care?
No, he's not going to care.
But let me ask you this. What did you think of LeBron's... Did you see... I think it was an Instagram post about Kyrie Irving. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Where he basically was very complimentary and like much love and everything like that. Are you surprised that he didn't go other route and like maybe do one of his passive-aggressive...
LeBron generally handles the biggest stories properly. The decision notwithstanding, obviously, when he went on national TV and said he's taking his talents to South Beach, LeBron can be passive-aggressive.
All the time.
And he can post his videos, and he can send out...
Weird stuff.
Yeah, some tweets where you have to decipher exactly what he means. But generally speaking, when the biggest moment is there, he's generally all class.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not surprised. Listen, Kyrie Irving helped him accomplish what he always dreamt of accomplishing, and that was winning a title in Cleveland. Without Kyrie Irving, he doesn't do that 2 years ago.
Do you think he should have come out at some point during the summer when the trade request came out and said something?
No, it's not his job to.
Yeah.
That's why this trade doesn't affect anything LeBron James is going to do. LeBron is so far above and beyond every other player in the league, including Durant, Steph Curry, Westbrook.
In terms of talent?
No, just in terms of his pedigree, in terms of his importance, his significance. He's the only guy that gets compared to Jordan. Nobody else gets compared to Jordan.
Rightly so.
Absolutely. He's LeBron. He's the king. He's the guy that's been to the NBA Finals 7 years in a row. He's the most marketable player in the league. He's the most talked about athlete of the 21st century. He doesn't have to worry about what Kyrie Irving thinks or if Isaiah Thomas will sign here at the end of the year if LeBron sticks around. LeBron's going to make his own decision when he makes it. I'm not convinced he's made up his mind. Even if he has, it's subject to change. And he's not going to counsel with Isaiah Thomas or Tristan Thompson or Kevin Love. He's not going to do that. He can do whatever he wants, and he knows he can do whatever he wants. And I think the fact that he's been to three straight finals and he won that title 2 years ago, Cleveland doesn't want to see him go, but they're not going to have the same reaction if he does leave.
You don't think the reaction will be fiery?
As vitriolic? No, we're close.
Yeah.
There'll be people disappointed. There'll be some jerseys burned. That's just the way fans work. But you got to appreciate that he came back. He got them to three straight finals. I think he's done a great job of putting a lot of the onus on the owner, saying this owner's a donkey, and if I leave, it's because of this guy.
But don't you think, like, going back to the conversation we had about the NHL and the NBA, don't you think it would bring more excitement and intrigue if the NHL had their best player in that kind of situation where he potentially could move? Like, imagine, like, let's try to paint that scenario for Crosby. Starts in Pittsburgh. Let's say he goes, I don't know, he goes to Toronto or he goes to New York. And then he goes back to Pittsburgh. You know what I mean? Like, imagine how fun it would be if, like, stars moved around all the time.
It would be a much more interesting league. And all of these players would have much more interesting careers.
Yeah, and they'd have more opportunity to win. But the one thing, like, I you know, walking around downtown, you see people wearing jerseys. Jerseys are basically worthless because the guy barely plays.
Well, like, Kyrie Irving is on the cover of 2018's whatever the basketball
2K
game is.
Whatever?
Yeah, 2K18. Malkin in the middle tweeting in saying 2010 LeBron was still with the Cavs. You're right. They lost to Boston in the playoffs that year.
Well, that, I so think that's that was the year he took off the jersey. Remember he took off the Cavs jersey as he was walking into the tunnel?
And then that was the summer
and
where
that was like the
he
picture
took his
right
talents to, to South Beach. We'll pick up on that later in the hour. Kevin Pelton will join us at 6:30, ESPN NBA Insider. Jay's in action tonight. Stroman on the mound. We'll touch on that. The Pilar situation last night. But fight night in Vegas this Saturday, Mayweather-McGregor. And we've got one of the all-time greats on the line. He is former undisputed heavyweight champ, Boxing Hall of Famer, one of Canada's greatest athletes. Back on Overdrive, here is Lennox Lewis. How you doing, champ?
Hey, I'm good.
So give us your take as you build up this fight. Are you approaching it as a legitimate boxing match, or is this a circus for you?
I think it's actually a circus to a certain degree. I don't know how serious the guys are about the fight. You know, I noticed they're getting in each other's face. I know nobody could get in my face if we were fighting. I'd have to push him away or do something, but that's a, you know, it's not respecting my distance. But I don't know how anybody can actually look at this as being a serious fight. I mean, has anybody seen Conor McGregor actually box? No, nobody's ever seen him box. I know he's a terrific fighter. You know, he can. He's a move. He's like a Bruce Lee to me. But this is boxing. This is being a pugilist specialist. This is only using your hands. And Floyd Mayweather is the king at that. You know, the king at defense, so, you know, he can do what he wants in there because he's like the professor. He's a professor against the schoolboy in a sense of experience in boxing. So I can't really take something like this serious.
How do Mayweather's boxing skills rank all time for you?
I think he's extraordinary. You know, there's different types of fighters. There's defensive fighters. There's counterpunch fighters. There's aggressive fighters. Or there's pugilist specialists. And, you know, he's definitely a defensive fighter. There's a lot of fights that people have gone to that would have loved to see him be more active in it. But he was doing his thing, moving around the ring like a butterfly. And, you know, I think he's got remarkable talents of staying away from punches. And as far as his knockout record is pretty good as well. So, you know, when he wants to turn it up, he can turn it up. And, you know, that's a seasoned professional, you could call a chemist, a professor at what he does.
Lennox, if this was you 10 years ago and you were approached about this kind of fight, would you be interested or would you consider it maybe, I don't know, a sham or an insult to boxing?
Well, I actually was offered something like that, but I realized, you know, I looked back in history and I looked at Muhammad Ali and I looked at he did it with a wrestler and the guy just was kicking him on his legs. And I'm like, yo, the guy's trying to take away Muhammad Ali's legs. It's not a street fight, it's a boxing fight. So what is he doing? I think it's silly, you know. In certain places, you know, people say, you shouldn't really kick. This is fighting. Use your hands, you know, use your fists. And this is what it's going to be in the ring. It's going to be boxing, only using your hands. I mean, and then I don't know if you can do karate punching or whatever in a boxing match. So we're going to have to see how the referee scores it.
Are you concerned at all or maybe intrigued by the idea that the instincts of McGregor may lead to him, you know, kicking or doing something crazy? Because that's how he fights. I mean, he's an MMA guy. Do you consider that an opportunity here?
You said if this ever happened to me before, and I'm like, okay, when I've seen Muhammad Ali, you know, almost get kicked, I said, nah, I'm not doing anything like that. Because at the end of the day, the person that really wins is the promoter. So even if something happens out of the norm, like McGregor catches him and chokes him out or something mad like that, you know, the promoters won. And the boxers, you know, they're looked at as, it was all a show, it was silly, you know, we came to see boxing and look what happened. So, you know, everybody's wondering what's going to happen. Well, I guess that's the intrude. That's what people want to see about the fight, and so intrude about it.
With Lennox Lewis here on Overdrive, what I've found interesting about Mayweather's approach in terms of the promotion leading up to it sounds very different than he ever has. I mean, yesterday he admitted maybe he's lost a step or two. It sounds like he's trying to sell the general public on the idea that he could lose this fight, and that just simply is not the way he's ever approached a fight before. He is the epitome of a confident fighter. Have you ever felt, you know, obligated to sell the audience on the fact that you could lose a fight?
Well, I think he's trying to show the audience something that, you know, everybody feels that, oh, he's not going to lose because he's 49-0, and there's always a possibility of him losing. You know, say if he put his hands down and allowed Colin McGregor to get a free shot because he's showboating. Oh, you know, people say, oh, good for him. And he'll be saying, oh, well, good for me too, because we can have a rematch for more money. You know what I mean? So he's an ultimate salesman, and he knows how to sell a fight. He's been doing it for years. So if he's saying that, then, you know, that's putting doubt in a lot of people's minds, and that will make them buy into it.
Well, Lennox, you mentioned selling a fight, and we had the press conference today. What are those press conferences like? Like, what do you remember about trying to sell a fight in those forums?
Well, for me, it was really all about, you know, I'm on a mission, and this is the man that's in front of me, and he's trying to sidetrack my mission, and I'm not going to allow that to happen. And really, just to me, I didn't really need to sell a fight. The fight really sold itself in that sense. Nowadays, you're trying to get more money out of a fight, so any little situation that happens, I mean, if you look at UFC press conferences with Colin McGregor, he's always throwing water bottles and getting into some type of altercation. And it works. It works because people, you know, see the action and they're expecting more action on the night. And they realize that these two guys are fired up and the fireworks are going and there'll be more fireworks on the night. So everybody's excited about it and say, oh, did you see that? He pushed him. He looked scared. You know, the talks begin and the promotion starts.
With Lennox Lewis, how would you compare the atmosphere, the build-up, just the experience fighting in Vegas compared to fighting anywhere else?
Vegas is, you could say it's the Mecca of boxing to a certain degree, because it's held all sorts of champions. Every champion in every weight class dreams about fighting in Vegas. And, you know, as an amateur growing up, I've always dreamt of fighting in Vegas or even seeing a fight. And I've been to a fight, you know, see Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvis Hagler, or seeing them all. So it's a great atmosphere and a great place to have a fight.
Yeah, being in the crowd. I've never been to Vegas to see a fight and be in the building, but you hear stories that the adrenaline and just the rush of being in the crowd. I mean, you're a fighter. I can't imagine anyone was messing with you when you were in the crowd. Was anyone stupid enough to do that?
What?
Like when you were sitting in the crowd watching a fight, someone messing with you or chirping or anything like that? If
no,
anything got carried away?
No, not really. Most people just want to know what I'm thinking, and isn't an exciting fight, and you know they're having fun, and we're talking about each round and what's happening in the particular fight. I remember a certain at a certain time during when I was boxing, somebody said they went to see me box for the first time, and they were sitting in the front row. And it was such a great time because they got blood on them. I hit the guy and they got blood on their suit. And they thought it was great because they were like part of it. So I guess I told them, you know, I guess you guys are always going to be up at the front so you can be part of it.
No kidding, man. And that would cost a pretty penny, I would think, too, to get up front close and personal for a Lennox Lewis fight in Vegas. Well, we can't thank you enough for the time and the takes and the breakdown of what we can expect this weekend. Enjoy the fight, and I'm sure we'll catch up again down the road.
All right. Bless.
There he is. Lennox Lewis, the former undisputed heavyweight champion of the World Boxing Hall of Famer. Would you want to be front row for a big fight in Vegas where you hear the history of just
100%
the rush? And yeah, me too. I would pay a lot of money.
But
for
can you imagine paying a lot of money and then it's over quick?
Well, I guess
that can happen. At
that's the thing. I don't UFC sympathize fights. For fans. You know what you're walking into when you buy the ticket. You know that there's potential that it could be a blowout. In this case, it could be an early knockout. Anything can happen when you put down the money.
Yeah, and I guess that can happen. Like, you can go to a hockey game or a basketball game, baseball game.
10-0 game. You can walk into a ball game 10 minutes late, and it's already like 4-0. And
do you stay? Like, what are your rules for games? Like, do you leave?
I would stick around if I've made the commitment to go down and you're there and you're in the seats.
So what if it's 10-0 in the fourth? Staying or bailing?
Baseball's different, though, right? There's no clock. I think it's different for other sports.
What about hockey? Let's say it's like 4-0 after two.
Hockey, maybe I would stick around. Like basketball, if it's like a 30-point difference going into the fourth quarter, I might leave because that's chances are nothing's going to change. It's probably going to get worse, or both benches will be unloaded. It'll be a bunch of backup stiffs out there wrapping up the game. But with a boxing match, I mean, especially Vegas, the beauty of it is you're in Vegas. Okay, the fight ended quickly. That sucks. But then you walk out and you're in Vegas.
Well, can I ask you this? What is the event you've spent the most money to go see? Sports or otherwise?
Probably otherwise. I would say paying for comedy tickets or, you know.
What'd you see?
I went to see Louis C.K. when he was in town last month.
That's worth it.
And I had to get that secondary market. I tried to get it online. I couldn't. So I paid a decent amount for that. And that was StubHub, and it's in American money. And then you get the bill, and you're like, wait a minute, that wasn't exactly what I was expecting. Yeah, so I probably something through StubHub, secondary market. But I can't recall like one event where I paid that much money that it sticks out.
Was it worth it? For Louis C.K.?
Yeah, I think so, because it's so unique, right? Like, he's only here. This was the first time in like 7 or 8 years he had been in town, I think. And I don't expect to see him ever again. And, you know, I'm a fan and whatever. Actually, no, you know who I'm thinking of is Ricky Gervais.
But
it's still, I would do it for Louis C.K. as well. I don't know, a band that I love, if I really felt like it was their last time here.
Aren't you a big Pearl Jam fan?
Yeah, but they tour all the time. They're always here. I've seen them a couple of times, and I paid a decent amount of money, but like, if it was actually, hey, this is it, we're never playing here again, I don't know how much I would be willing to pay, but I'd pay more than double face value, triple face value.
What if it was like the last Stones concert for 80?
I don't know, man. I don't trust them. They've been saying that for 30 years. We had Gord Miller was in here last week, and he told a story about how in 1981 he went to see them in Denver, Colorado, because they had promised the world this was it. We're done. We're never touring again. 36 years ago.
Wow.
And I'm pretty sure they're probably on tour right now. Wouldn't shock me if they were playing the Rogers Center tonight. We're going to get back into the Cavs-Celtics trade and where the Raptors come in on this, how Raptors fans should be feeling about it. And Jay's back in action tonight, Stroman on the mound down in Tampa. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Don't forget to set your PVR on TSN 2. If you can't watch the show live, you can watch it later. You can find everything podcasted online, tsn1050.ca. Check out every hour of the show on iTunes. Brian Hayes, Jonas Siegel from the Canadian Press. Kevin Pelton will join us from ESPN. Get his take on the Cavs-Celtics deal. I think the timing of it was surprising. The fact that these were the two top teams in the East made it surprising, but we were bracing for Kyrie Irving to potentially be traded. The trade request was outstanding. There have been reports that they were trying to move him at the draft, and he was aware of it. Reports last week that I guess what led to Kyrie Irving maybe pushing himself out was that he had heard about the fact that he might get dealt at the draft, and he thought LeBron had something to do with it. I just feel like maybe the Cavs were at a point where they didn't think they could reel him back in. And even if they tried to bring him back, and he would have had to, he was under contract, maybe it just wouldn't have worked out with him and LeBron, and he still would have wanted out at some point, and the demand would have been there, so you were going to trade him at some point.
I think I saw a report yesterday that he wasn't going to report for training camp.
And they can threaten that all they want.
I know, but like then you start to have that distraction, and then your leverage is even less. What I was going to ask you is there a world where you think it's a mistake to trade him to your main rival in the East? Like, they got obviously a good package, but you've also sort of, depending on who you agree with, you've sort of strengthened Boston.
Well,
I think they have.
You gave Boston something that they clearly wanted.
And it
Boston was willing to pay the price.
Right. Like, is there any world where that's wrong? Like, you shouldn't have made your...
Conventional wisdom would suggest that in the sports world. There are a lot of teams that just don't make trades. The Leafs and Habs just don't make trades. Boston and New York, the Yankees, they haven't made a trade since like 1980-something. But I think Cleveland is in a very precarious position because LeBron James holds all the cards. They are still on the same level with Boston for another year, but if LeBron leaves, they fall off a cliff. Then they're no longer in Boston's class, you would presume. And that's why I think it was a smart move, because I think they have protected themselves both ways. I think they're still the favorite to win the East with this trade. Mm-hmm. And if LeBron leaves at the end of the year and Isaiah Thomas walks, he's a free agent as well. All of a sudden, if they decide, okay, we got to blow it up and rebuild, they got the Brooklyn pick.
Yeah, but there's a chance the Brooklyn pick is not going to be as good as it was before. Brooklyn might be better.
I think they've gotten better. You can't be worse. So, like, they're the worst team in the NBA.
I know, but what if it becomes the eighth pick, or it becomes, you know what I mean? Like,
I can't see that, but it could
be. I thought they were going to go for, like, the whole talk was that they were going to try to get a young potential star to eventually, like, replace LeBron if he left.
I think that's ideal.
But they didn't get that.
I understand that. But you also,
and they also made their chief rival better.
You have to question the what else was available to
That's
them.
That's true.
Because Kyrie Irving, even though he didn't have the right to demand
where he
was going, he didn't have a no trade list.
Right.
By all accounts, he had suggested this is where I'd like to go, and I guess
some kooky
they were willing to appease
choices. That.
Well, that's the thing. Like, San Antonio was high on his list. And he was, I guess, willing to accept long-term contract stability in San Antonio, maybe take a pay cut if he went there. But what were they going to give Cleveland? They weren't trading Kawhi Leonard.
Right.
They weren't going to trade LaMarcus Aldridge.
Well, they would, but that's not getting it done.
But that's not a young piece that you're building around.
Right.
So if you're not getting Kawhi, what are you expecting to get out of them?
But so, yeah, I guess if you look around and that's your best offer.
Like the Knicks, I think if Porzingis was on the table... and other pieces, the Cavs may have decided to do that.
For sure.
But the Knicks weren't going to trade Porzingis.
Because why would they?
I don't know.
It just was a really tough position to be in. Like, I don't know that there was a great...
That's why I think they actually made a great deal. I understand what you're saying, because they did at least offer something that their chief rival clearly wanted.
Yeah.
Danny Ainge and the Celtics wanted Kyrie Irving, and Cleveland was willing to appease that request. But Kyrie demanded out. It was a public demand. No one knows what's going to happen with LeBron. You've got a rookie GM.
But what would happen if you just
said... And I think he pulled off a really good move.
What would happen if you just said, we're not trading him? Sorry. You're under contract?
They could have. He would have had to show up. What's he going to do?
Exactly.
But the NBA, it's a players' league now. The players run everything. The players generally, if they make a wish, it gets granted. And the truth is, even if he came back reluctantly and played, and LeBron walked at the end of next year, he'd still want out. And he'd demand out, and then he and his agent would talk publicly again, and you'd have a circus on your hands. Then you risk fans starting to hate him, and it gets ugly. Let's bring in ESPN NBA insider. Here's Kevin Pelton. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
My buddy Jonas here brought this point up, and it's a... angle that we've been approaching throughout the afternoon, the idea that Cleveland decided to make a trade with Boston, with the team that finished first in the Eastern Conference this year, with the team they played in the Eastern Conference final. Are you surprised at all that they decided to do that?
It's fascinating from that standpoint, and certainly unusual. You know, I don't think you'd expect the Warriors to be making a blockbuster deal with the Spurs or the Rockets in the West, whichever team you think is currently the second best. But, you know, I think it does speak to the fact that these teams have slightly different timelines at this point, and therefore could kind of, you know, offer the other one something that helps them a little bit more in terms of, you know, for Cleveland, everything is about trying to win next year or trying to potentially build, you know, a post-LeBron future if he is to leave in free agency next summer. Whereas, you know, for the Celtics, they can afford to take a little bit of a longer view because of the fact that they've got so much young talent around Gordon Hayward and Al Horford. And, you know, the fact that Kyrie Irving is a few years younger, I think a big factor in this for them.
So I was reading your piece today. You gave this grade for the Cavs. You gave an A grade for this trade. Why were you so impressed from a Cleveland perspective?
Well, I think, like I said, they had two, you know, kind of real objectives that they had to hit in this trade, and, you know, or maybe to choose between, and this trade allowed them to do both, and that's, you know, keep themselves in position to try to win a championship next year. And I think, you know, particularly getting Jay Crowder in this deal, a 3-and-D role player with the ability to play both forward spots, to switch defensively, he's the ideal kind of player you'd want in a series against the Warriors if you get back to the NBA Finals, and they hadn't really done anything this offseason to add that type of player. So that's really crucial for them. And then, you know, the other aspect of it, again, is preparing for the possibility that LeBron James walks away next summer and you're starting a bit of a rebuild. And now they would potentially enter that with what's probably going to be a top 10 pick, maybe a top 5 pick from the Brooklyn Nets.
Kevin, my initial first reaction of learning of the trade was, wow, Boston just got Kyrie. Do you think they're better today than they were, you know, 2 days ago when they had Isaiah?
So I don't think they're better for this season because of the fact that it cost them two starters. And, you know, in particular, Jay Crowder, everything that kind of played out this offseason had become in many ways more important for them. You know, they don't have a ton of depth in the front court now. You know, Marcus Morris is basically their only other option at power forward besides Al Horford. You know, I assume Jaylen Brown will play some there, and he's someone they're really going to ask to step up as a result of this trade. But I don't think he's, you know, ready to contribute as a role player at anywhere near the level that Crowder did. I think for them, you know, it's really about, you know, does this trade make them better in 2018-19 and then going beyond that because of Kyrie's youth, because of the fact that he's under contract at a reasonable price for 2 years, whereas they had this difficult decision coming up with Isaiah Thomas's free agency next summer. You know, were they going to be comfortable guaranteeing long-term money to, you know, an undersized point guard going into his 30s? And I think, you know, clearly given what they were willing to give up in this trade, the answer to that was no.
Well, then do you think, like, we've seen Danny Ainge for years kind of piling up these chips and waiting for the right time to strike? You know, we saw Daryl Morey do it with James Harden. Do you think this was the right strike to use, you know, some of those big chips that they had?
It's an understandable one in terms of, you know, point guard is such an important position in the modern NBA. It solves, you know, like I said, that Thomas issue. And, you know, he doesn't have kind of the fit issues playing him and Gordon Hayward together that you would if you had brought in Jimmy Butler or Paul George. You know, I think George would have worked out very well, but he's only got under contract for the 1 year and then pretty likely to leave. By all accounts, the Celtics feel comfortable with the possibility of re-signing Kyrie. And, you know, Butler, the fact that they didn't make that trade for him, I think, you know, does suggest they had some concerns about the fit. And then the other aspect of it is both of those guys, you know, those trades went down before they had a chance to figure out whether Gordon Hayward was going to sign with them in free agency. Now that they've made that move, they have kind of a better understanding of their needs and their position and the fact that, you know, they're ready to try to compete, you know, in the next couple of years and to give up draft picks to accomplish that goal. I think, you know, they might have been willing to offer something similar, you know, for Jimmy Butler had they already signed Gordon Hayward, but we'll never know because Chicago moved before they had that chance.
With Kevin Pelton, ESPN NBA insider here on Overdrive, we've been talking about how the Raptors fall in line with this deal. And if I'm a Raptors fan, I'm not ecstatic with this because I still think the two top teams in the East remain Cleveland in Boston, and if I'm betting, I still think Cleveland is the favorite to win the East. I think they'll beat Boston in the Eastern Final just based on the rosters I'm looking at right now. Masai decided to bring back Lowry, bring back Ibaka, essentially bring back the band. He kept Dwayne Casey on as the coach. How do you think this affects maybe the way Masai looks back on his offseason?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I do think that, you know, Boston giving up three players, two starters for one, does weaken them a little bit this year and potentially give Toronto a slightly better chance of, you know, getting into that Eastern Conference final again against Cleveland. But, you know, probably the big question for the Raptors should be, you know, if LeBron goes to the Western Conference in the summer of 2018, you know, are you positioned to kind of try to step into that power void in 2 years? And that's where, you know, Kyrie Irving replacing Isaiah Thomas, it's probably a slight negative from them from that standpoint. But, you know, Cleveland continuing to push his chips towards, you know, we want to win this season, and there's clearly uncertainty about whether LeBron James is going to stay. I mean, that's good news for everyone else in the Eastern Conference because of the fact that Cleveland has been so dominant at the top of the conference for such a long period of time.
Kevin, do you think this pushes them any closer to potentially being able to beat the Warriors?
In terms of Cleveland?
Yeah, I think we're all assuming that that's going to be happening again, unless you're not.
No, I mean, I think it strengthens them as the favorite in the Eastern Conference this year. I mean, like I said, I think Jay Crowder is a great player to have in that series.
Right.
And, you know, he'd be one of the five best players, you know, part of Cleveland's best lineup in the NBA Finals. You know, him and LeBron James at forward, either Kevin Love or Tristan Thompson at center, and then probably Isaiah Thomas and J.R. Smith in the backcourt. Certainly, you know, Thomas with his size, even though he's not necessarily been a dramatically worse defender than Kyrie Irving in the regular season, because of the fact that with Irving it's really more about his effort and not about his size, he can turn it up a little bit in the NBA Finals. We saw that, you know, when they came back from 3-1 in 2016, where he was effective at the defensive end of the court. With Isaiah, because it's a physical limitation, I'm not sure that he has the ability to do that. So, you know, I think it is a downgrade for them at point guard, but offset by the fact that they improve in terms of, you know, that combo forward spot that's kind of eluded them, that Richard Jefferson played so successfully during that 2016 finals. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think they're maybe slightly better, you know, equipped to deal with the Warriors if that's the finals matchup again.
Thank you, Kevin. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Kevin Pelton, the ESPN NBA insider. You still got to play the season out. The one thing that never changes is Golden State is going to win the West and win the title.
You wouldn't put all your money on a Golden State Cleveland final right now? Four straight?
All my money? Every cent I have? I would put a lot of money on that. I wouldn't put it four straight or a sweep, but I would put a lot of money on Golden State Cleveland
4.0
and Golden State winning.
Do you think that, like, that's how it sort of used to be in, I guess, the NBA and the NHL? Are you okay with it? Like, I kind of like it a little bit. I know it's, like, it's anticlimactic because we know how it's going to be, but it kind of creates like a signature series. You know what I mean?
Like, well, it's almost like a fight. Like, there's a buildup. You're just waiting for the fight to get here, and you're waiting for that final series. Problem is, it wasn't much of a finals.
No, it wasn't good.
Golden
but the
State,
year, the years before were great.
Yeah, they were. Like, 2 years ago when Cleveland won in Game 7, that was one of the great series you'll ever come across. And Golden State up 3-1, and the way LeBron performed, and they went on the road.
Even the one before, where LeBron was just probably the best I've ever seen anyone play.
And that at least won 6 games.
Yeah.
There was something to that. This year, it was such a mismatch because of Durant. Right? Like, I think you need injuries to pop up to make it more of an interesting series. If Curry, Clay, Durant, Draymond Green, Iguodala, they're all still healthy and playing, I don't picture a scenario where they lose.
But it would be a disappointment for me if anyone else but Cleveland made the final to play them. Like, they're the one team I could actually see maybe beating them.
Because of LeBron.
And because of, like, the potential for 4 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And because of LeBron.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think Boston has a shot at beating Golden State.
I don't think anybody has a shot.
No, I think only LeBron and what he can bring and how he can elevate his game, because we've seen it before, gives you a puncher's chance at beating Golden State.
He's also getting up there. Like, we're not at that point yet.
He's got more mileage on him, but he continues to perform at just a ludicrous level for the amount of mileage that he has.
But there was like sort of some fatigue a little bit that seemed to
during the regular season.
No, this final. And like,
was there really though?
Like, this whole Laker thing. Like, he's going to be. I think he'll be 34.
Yeah, I think he's 32 now.
Yeah. So when he goes to the Lakers, assuming he does.
But if at that point, let's say Paul George goes with him, let's say Lonzo Ball actually performs.
Yeah, I see.
You know, he's going to need more help as he gets older. There's no denying that. And I wouldn't suggest just because he goes there and Paul George goes there, all of a sudden they're going to knock out Golden State. On paper, Golden State's still better. If Curry stays, Durant stays, Clay, Draymond Green. I mean, Golden State has the potential to put forth a run like we've never seen before.
Would you put any money on Pittsburgh winning 3 cups in a row?
I'd put a little bit of money on that.
I don't think it's happened since like 84, 85 with the Islanders. Is that
right?
Yeah,
the Islanders won 4 in a row. Yeah. I don't think the Oilers ever won 3 in a row.
They won 2, lost 1, 2.
So the Islanders, last team to do it. I don't feel good about it. I don't think they will. They won't be my pick. But I can't say it's impossible. Again, if they're healthy, they've proven that.
Well, they had the second best record in the league last year with like a million injuries. They might be my President's Trophy.
The thing is, I don't know who I would put ahead of them right now. I think Washington has taken a step back.
Yep, big
one. I don't feel great about Washington. Tampa's always going to be that team that people every year, they're like, look at all the talent, but they haven't. Like last year, they had
really
all those injuries.
Like
I like them, but I still. Vasilevsky's never proven anything.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Bishop isn't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
In the West, Chicago got swept.
And then
they lost in the first round 2 years in a row.
And then completely flipped their team over.
L.A. isn't the same team. Anaheim.
They're not in it.
You know, I like Anaheim.
Edmonton?
I like their defense. Edmonton's an interesting pick. I mean, in Vegas, I think they're second or third in terms of cup odds.
Toronto?
The thing is, when you start
looking... It's not crazy.
It's not crazy.
That's the thing.
It's not crazy. When you start to look at other teams and you're like, okay, who's got a better chance, Toronto or the Rangers?
Toronto.
Toronto or Columbus?
Probably Toronto.
Toronto or Montreal? Now you just start looking at teams in the East and you're like, I could see them... You can't be 100% confident. It's not like they're Golden State or something stupid like that, but... Could it happen? Yeah, it could happen. Jonas Siegel picking the Leafs in the East. Mark this date. All right, we'll get to our best bets. Tee up the Jays game. They are down in Tampa. Stroman on the mound tonight. Donaldson back at third. The stint at shortstop has come to an end. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. All right, time now for our best bets. Brought to you by ProLine. I'm in Arizona tonight. At the Mets. The Mets are a tire fire. They're mailing in this season. Jays are a tire fire too, but I'm going to take them winning tonight because Stroman's on the mound. He's the only sure bet. And Seattle gets past Atlanta. Throw down 20 and you can score 63. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. And get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, matchup stats on your phone. ProLine. Get way into the game. The Jays now 6 out of a wild card spot.
It ain't happening.
It's done. It's over. Realistically, it's been over since like mid-April. But you started to feel okay about yourself going into Wrigley. You went 7-3 at home. They were 3 out of a wild card. Now they've lost 4 in a row. It's over. They're done. It's down to, I would say, 5 teams. I felt okay about 3 teams in the AL East making the playoffs at one point. Maybe even for a couple of months. But the Yankees are going to get in, and then it's Minnesota, the Angels, the Royals, the Mariners, the Rangers. One of those 5 teams. I don't know who at this point, but one of those 5 teams.
Well, given that we know that that's going to be the outcome, what would you put the percentage at that Donaldson will be traded in the offseason? Like 20 to 25% or not that high?
Something in that ballpark, yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if it happened. I'm not going into the offseason expecting it to happen. But I think they'll take calls. They'll listen, and it's on them. If they want to make the move, there are a lot of teams that would happily oblige.
Do you think they should want to make the move? I think they should.
I don't think so. If they're committed to actually turning this thing around, then you've got to keep Donaldson.
I guess the problem is like you have all these older guys signed. Mm-hmm. Like they're not going anywhere. So
Tulowitzki, Martin.
Right, Morales.
Yeah, Pierce. Smoke's got another
I guess
year.
You may as well keep him and see what happens next year. Hope Sanchez is healthy. Stroman repeats. I don't know.
I mean, you're risking him, I guess, walking at the end of the next year.
Or you can trade him.
Or sign him. Season. You know, sign him long term.
That's
lock
a big
him in.
Meatball, man.
It's not my money, and there's no cap. And he's the bringer of rain. He's still an MVP caliber player, right? Now that he's been healthy, look at the numbers he's put up the past month and a half. And he's back at third base tonight. Shortstop.
I was actually excited to watch that when I saw that it was going to be him at short. And
he survived, but at some point it was going to get exposed. You can't just show up and start playing short in the majors, man. Like
or third.
Any position, really. It's Major League Baseball. That said, we're talking about a fight where a guy's going to walk into a boxing ring and he's never boxed before. We'll see if McGregor, a lot of people think he could win. Anyway, Jonas, are you back in here later in the week? Or
no,
is this
that's
it for you?
It. I'm done with you.
All right, buddy. Well, it's good seeing you.
Thanks.
We'll do it again soon, I'm sure, I hope.
Enjoy the fight.
I'm looking forward to it.
Let me know what happens.
You too, man. I'll send you a note. It's Jonas Siegel from the Canadian Press. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.